Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Moment segment coming up later in the episode. All right, welcome on to a playoffs slash lottery slash what the hell are these teams that lost in the offseason gonna do edition of the Hollinger and Duncan podcast. And I guess we should probably start with the lottery and just the overall implications of that, John. It was relatively chalk, but big winners and losers, other than obviously Detroit and Houston being at 1-2.
Yeah, so I would say Golden State was probably a winner because they got the Minnesota pick rather than having to push it back a year and probably ending up lower. I mean, it was theoretically possible they could end up at 4, but that was a little bit of a pipe dream. So to get this pick, I think, is really good for them because now they have, they're looking at 7-14. Is that right?
Yes.
And you have Wiseman and you have a large trade exception. I mean, they are looking to surely throw all these assets together and get more immediate talent for this team to make like one final push with this Splash Brother axis. Because I think last year showed that even with Clay being back, that status quo is not good enough.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I don't think they actually have a trade exception now. They used the Iguodala one on Oubre.
Oh, you're correct.
But maybe they could get another one
when they sign and trade Oubre.
And trades elsewhere. It does not appear that those sides are particularly interested in a reunion, although perhaps that could change if Oubre's market were to dry up, because as I went through it earlier, I didn't really see the team that was champing at the bit to offer him more than the mid-level exception. But, you know, maybe that'll change. I don't know what the opinion of him is. I think this year probably hurt his value to some degree. So what do these guys need? Because they're kind of making noises right now. I mean, it could just be a smokescreen of like, oh yeah, like we can't afford to trade for another veteran and we're just going to try and still keep these guys around and develop them with Wiseman and 7-14. You know, Joe Lacob had an interview with your colleague Tim Kawakami that sort of implied that, although again, you know, who knows how real that actually is. But, you know, what do they need? What could they realistically get? Because it doesn't seem like they have the ammo to trade for a star necessarily, even if such a player were to become available, which it doesn't seem is the case right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the dream scenario, I think, is that Damian Lillard becomes available and you you package all this stuff that you have together, like literally everything that isn't nailed down.
Dame and Steph together?
Yeah, baby. Let it rip.
I would be very surprised if that happened.
Okay. We're getting deep into conjecture, obviously.
Yeah. You called them getting the number 4 pick a pipe dream. That had a 9% chance of happening. If that's a pipe dream, what is Dame Lillard and Steph Curry on the same team?
Let's walk this back a little.
You're looking
for a star player to become unhappy, and it happens every offseason, right? That some guy decides he doesn't want to be there anymore and his name gets out there, and you know, maybe Golden State can then be the team that packages assets and the Wiggins contract and brings back somebody who's, you know, a all-star-ish caliber forward.
Yeah. I mean that would be the ideal, but without that, you know, they don't have much in terms of matching salary. That's why I think the Oubre potential sign and trade to get the trade exception is big.
Now Looney plus Wiseman gets you to like 18 that you can bring.
Oh,
back,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. That's not nothing.
And then these picks, if you sign them and then trade them a month later, you can get to a pretty good number.
That's a good point too. Now I don't see them moving Wiseman for just like a starter on the wing. Now I might consider doing that if I were them. I'm just pretty low on Wiseman's potential, particularly after the injury. I mean, that also is in theory selling low on him, but like, is his trade value going to go up next year because they're clearly going to bring in some kind of another center. Like, I don't know if he's even going to start next year.
If he starts next year. Yeah.
I mean, you can't rely on him to start next year. Like, he may not even be ready for the start of camp. And he killed them this year, and he can't play with Draymond. So maybe that could change, but he's got to get so much better defensively and so much better as a shooter, I think, for that to be the case. So, you know, they're going to bring in the center. So now playing like some bench minutes, you know, 15 minutes a game with Jordan Poole on the second unit, that's going to like increase his trade value for next year. You know, people are like, oh, you don't, they're saying the same thing about Ben Simmons right now too, right? Of, oh, well, you don't want to sell low, right? And okay, that's the same thing that Brian Colangelo was saying about Jahlil Okafor and Nerlens Noel too. And hey, big surprise, like if there's a reason that his trade value is down, that reason could continue to be the case, and then it's going to get even lower.
You left out Andrea Bargnani. Yeah. I think that's absolutely true. Yeah. Wiseman, I think they reached for him on draft day because he was a center and they were thinking we need a center, but they didn't need this center. And so I think they outsmarted themselves a little, and now you just have to play this hand for what it is. So, you know, this is what they're dealing with right now. They're probably not going to get 100 cents on the dollar for Wiseman now, especially if you think he's still going to be good. But you need to maximize this season, you know, where you're at the tail end of the prime of Steph, Clay, Draymond, and then, you know, you're getting into a very unknown area after that, and you're probably going to be bad regardless of how these picks pan out. The Wiseman plus 7 plus 14 plus, oh, let's not forget Smiley too. And so that's just what the situation you're in. Every team faces it, right? It's kind of the natural up and down cycle. So you got to max out what you have right now, and that's going to involve putting these picks and players in play. I think the thing that gets interesting is, can you do a deal like this to trade for somebody who's like already good and in his third season?
Yeah, that would certainly be a hope, particularly because of their tax. I think you make a really good point there, though. Yeah,
and how much can they spend for this team?
I mean, you'd think they could spend as much as they spent last year. You know, so that like the Oubre salary spot is expiring. You'd think that they would at least be able to replace that. But I think to go back to something you said earlier that I think was a really good point is they whiffed on James Wiseman. Like, to me, okay, James Wiseman, he might be a solid player. Might be a decent starting center down the line. I mean, Joe Lacob did say in that interview he thinks he's going to be a future all-star. I mean, as bad as the circumstances were for him, and as good as he could look at times athletically, I think just watching him, his feel was so bad that I just felt like there's no way that this guy can be a future, you know, number one or number two. Like, maybe it happens, but I think the odds of that are low enough, because that was the idea, right? Okay, we got the number two pick. At least, you know, yeah, if the whole Steph and Clay and Draymond, when they're gone, like, this guy will be around. This guy will be like our future superstar that's going to propel the next era of Warriors basketball. I think that ship has sailed on James Wiseman.
I don't think that ship ever floated.
Right, but I mean, even if you were a big believer in him, I think you've seen enough to just be like, man, this guy just looks so lost. On the offensive end, too, right? I mean, he's sort of like, he's like hitting buttons on the controller, but he just has like no feel for where the defense is, or like, you know, he's, and so, yeah, could he turn into a useful player? Like, I would say that the odds of him being as good as DeAndre Ayton is right now are, you know, lower than 50%, right? And even DeAndre Ayton, you know, he's a solid complementary player, but if he's your best guy, you know, you're not doing much, right? Like, for James Wiseman to be that foundational piece, you're seeing him as like, this is the guy that we're going to throw the ball to Jokic and Embiid style, and he's going to go out and kill you, right? So if he's not that, and he's not a future defensive player of the year, which I don't think he's either of those pretty obviously at this point, move him. You got to maximize this year. Like, you're not having James Wiseman and the 7 and the 14 pick this year as your foundation 3 years from now, who the hell cares? You know, like, you're going to be bad. It's going to be all about the draft picks that you're going to get when you're bad 3 years from now. You're just going to have to deal with that. Like, they had a chance maybe to sort of get someone in LaMelo who could have both contributed now and helped them in the future. They didn't get that. And so I think you just move the assets that you have and try to get two more years here with Steph where you're really in championship contention, because the alternative is not really that sexy.
I agree.
Most protein bars are awful. I like to work out. I've tried basically all of them. And before Built Bar, I'd resigned myself to the idea that they're all going to taste like a rock quarry. But now, with 18 amazing flavors, the improved Built Bar is even more delicious. There's 6 new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. Of course, there are classics like raspberry, peanut butter, double chocolate, peanut butter brownie. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate. That makes a huge difference, by the way. They're soft and easy to chew, but they're still great for the health conscious person. For example, peanut butter, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs. Great for a keto diet. And you can even get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Today's pod is also brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Locker Room rebranded now. They got bought by Spotify. Spotify Green Room. John and I jump on there, 2 Eastern, 11 Pacific, when we record, usually on Wednesdays. Danny LaRue and I host a room as well, 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, on Tuesdays. It's a great place to jump in, talk sports, banter back and forth, tell me why my tweets are terrible. Whatever you want to do, feel free to jump in on Spotify Green Room, both with me and John, and also with Danny and me. We'll see you there. All right, that's probably enough Warriors on this, though.
Yep.
You know, another thing that occurred to me is OKC. This is about the worst possible outcome for them. Their pick goes down. They don't get that Houston pick that they had a 48% chance of, for them to be sitting at with just the 6th pick. The swap rights with Houston, like, it's not like that rolls over to next year. They have plenty of other picks, but at 6, unless they want to use, I mean, maybe they try to use some of these many future picks to move up from 6. They might consider that if there's someone that they just love there, if they want to kind of accelerate things. But assuming that they don't do that, I think this means that it's going to be Tank City again there next year.
Without a doubt, yeah. You're right. It's disappointing. You had a best case scenario of ending up at 1-5, and instead you're 6-18. So that's pretty disappointing. I do think, as they look at their scenario, big picture, that they should be always looking to move up in every draft, basically, for the next 6 or 7 drafts, just because they have so many picks. They'll never be able to use them all. They'll never be able to keep all the players on the roster, even from the picks they use. So, you know, you got to try to move up from 6 with 16 and 18. You got to try to, if you can't do that, you got to try to move up from 16 and 18 and get yourself to 11 or 10 or whatever. Like, you got to keep doing that at every level of the draft, I think, for all these drafts that they're in. I wouldn't be crazy about doing it with future picks, though, because I think those future picks are always chips that they can use when, like, if there's some star that becomes available, when they're ready to push the button to do that type of thing in this rebuild, they have more assets than anybody else by far, right? Like, they can do the Paul George trade twice over. So I think you always keep that option open, but you're trading present picks to move up. I think you're doing that in every single draft if you're OKC.
Yeah, it's you know, it depends what the value of that is, because obviously any team that they're trying to move up with is going to make them pay through the nose, right? Knowing that they have all this stuff. Ah, what's another 2026 pick? Just throw it in. Come on.
Yeah.
If you really like this guy, we're going to make you pay, right? So they could run into that. I'm a little bit less worried about the idea of, like, oh, they're going to have 3 first-round picks, like they're going to run out of roster slots. That's fine, because only one of those 3 or 2 of those 3 are going to work out every year anyway. So, you know, if guys just don't work out, then all right, that's just the cost of doing business. That's how it works. That's kind of the whole trust the process thing. But I think just in terms of getting their own pick, like, they will want to, again, try to assure themselves getting a premium, you know, one of those premium picks. Like, they needed to get, if they had Shea and then another guy that they viewed as a future superstar after this draft, then maybe they could start kind of throttling it forward from a competitive standpoint. But I don't see that happening. I think they want to still have, because their own pick is the one that they control as far as, like, you know, really being able to potentially get a superstar in the draft with their own pick.
Exactly. And the one thing I will say for OKC, I don't see this as the draft where, you know, This is not the LeBron Carmelo draft, right? Like, the top of the board this year is pretty flat in terms of the drop off from picks when you do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think I think there's a little bit of a cliff when you get to about 9, but short of that, I think being somewhere in the single digits is basically fine.
Yeah. Any other kind of implications that really stood out to you about this lottery? Toronto, you know, should we talk about them?
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, bravo to them for pulling the plug on their what was likely to be an ill-fated playoff run anyway. And now they're in a pretty good situation here where they can add the fourth pick to a nucleus of Van Vliet, Ananobi, Siakam, you know, maybe Boucher, maybe Trent on top of that. They are going to have cap room. The fourth pick is going to cut into that a little bit, but still. So I think they're in a good spot to say, okay, we can turn the page now. We can let Kyle Lowry go or do a sign and trade with him with a clear conscience and know we're moving forward into the next era, and we have at least one high lottery pick out of it. And even if we're decent this year, it's not going to screw us from ever moving forward because we at least have one guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, who is the guy they're probably going to get it for?
That's interesting. I mean, it depends how the top half of the draft goes, but it looks like, I mean, Jalen Suggs seems to be the most likely guy. If you think Cade, Green, and Mobley are 1, 2, 3 in some order, then Suggs is the consensus number 4. I'm a little lower on him, but I'd say he's a likely guy there. I think Scottie Barnes is going to be a really interesting guy for them. 6'9", combo forward, handles the ball. It's like a point guard version of OG Anunoby almost. But who can guard fours and occasionally fives at the other end. Like he's really interesting as far as his defensive talent and ability to kind of be a slasher and creator on the ball. So we'll see how they go. I should mention Jonathan Kuminga too, although I'm a little lower on him. I mean, he's been in the top 5 on people's boards most of the year. So there's a few different directions they can go. It's going to be interesting to see how they choose to do this. I don't see them trading to move up because I don't see what they would trade.
Yeah, because they've kind of got guys who obviously like Van Vliet and Ananobi, those guys could like really help a team that's trying to win now, but there isn't necessarily that team above them. I mean, they do have all their own picks, but because kind of what I'm thinking is like, what is this augur for the direction that they're going to go in now? Because they are in this situation where they've got these guys who were, you know, a 50-win team a couple of years ago, but Lowry is probably gone. Can they draft a guy? If Suggs, it sounds like Green is not going to fall to them. So, I mean, it probably will be Suggs because it seems like people are pretty high on Mobley, too. That'd be interesting also to talk about Cleveland and, like, Jared Allen's future if they draft Mobley. But if that's the guy who's there, which it seems like it might be. But so let's say it's Suggs. They desperately needed, like, that main guy on the perimeter. Van Vliet can play the two just fine. Like, is Suggs someone who could have a Ja Morant type of impact where they're like, okay, you know, we're going to be in the lower end of the playoffs. We're going to start this guy at point guard. Hopefully just continue to build around him with these other guys that we have. We'll sign a center with our remaining cap space. And, like, that'll be a decent starting group, but we're still young enough to continue to evolve. And Suggs in 3 years could be good enough that, like, we're back in the mix in the East. Do you think that could be the play? Or is it, all right, now we got Suggs, let's continue the rebuild, let's move on from Van Vliet and Ananobi and possibly Siakam and just totally tank it for a couple of years, get a bunch of draft picks from those guys and try to get another couple of studs to pair with Suggs if it is Suggs?
I think it's more the former. I do. The one thing I wonder about, I do wonder if they would listen on Siakam for Ben Simmons.
Huh. That, right? Yeah, the two guys who had no business making second team All-NBA right? And got ridiculous raises out of it that have now made their contracts terrible, traded for one another.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, how do they have these contracts and not Jason Tatum?
Yeah, that's
pretty bad, right?
yeah, it's the voting was not great that year. You don't personally see Suggs as like that type of Ja Morant sort of prospect, it sounds like.
No, I don't. I think Ja Morant would be a pretty clear number one in this draft.
Yeah, but if you're Masai Ujiri, are you going to like? Are you trying to rebuild? Are you trying to just kind of keep this group together again and just say, hey, last year was the year from hell, and these guys are all pretty good together, and we got a great coach. They got Gary Trent to bring back too.
I think you try to, I think these guys are all in their 20s. So you try to keep it going, see what you have this year and see if, I mean, it was a weird year, obviously, for Toronto last year with the, you know, having to play in Tampa and the, I mean, just the last year was weird enough for everyone, but I think for the Raptors, it was especially trying. So I think you you run it back again. You add the number four pick. You kind of keep your powder dry, I think. Like, you re-sign Trent. Maybe you make, maybe you do something with that cap room, but maybe you hedge your bets a little bit.
Yeah, they got to get it. They got to get a starting center in there. But they've got Boucher as a backup, but they need someone with a little more beef who can be a little better than Aaron Baines last year.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think that's the direction you're going with this if you're Toronto. And then the only thing I wonder about when they look at that, the number for Siakam where they owe him $106 million for the next 3 years, if they look at that and go, yeah, we might have got in a little over our heads there. Maybe we, you know, maybe we need to move on from that or at least listen on that. But I think it argues for them to be a little conservative and at least till mid-season, see what they have with these guys playing in Toronto with a number four pick and a real center and see what that looks like before you reach for the dynamite.
Yeah, I guess, you know, your probably high-end outcome on that is like a six seed maybe.
I mean, that's what they were looking at originally, and they ended up piecing together a championship in a couple years, right? With the Lowry DeRozan team. So I think I think in their situation, I think you still you try to be good and you kind of, you know, look for opportunities to pounce. And if it just turns out that this configuration is just a 30-win team, even playing in Toronto, then you feel like you gave it a fair shot. You reach for the dynamite, and these guys are still going to have value.
Yeah. Well, if they're on pace to be a 30-win team, then obviously Siakam is looking absolutely toxic. You know, I think Ananobi and Van Vliet are always going to have value. But Boucher in the last year of his deal, maybe you can move on from him as well. The opportunity cost there is, you know, maybe you win enough games in the first half of the year that it's tough to get back into the high end of the lottery if you move on from guys at the trade deadline. And I mean, they certainly are quite experienced at tanking right now, so they could try that again and try and get up there.
As somebody whose team went 4-31 over its final 35 games 1 year, I think it is possible.
Well, here's actually an interesting thought too.
With the right commitment.
from what we saw this year, is that it seems like if you're committed in the second half of the year, you'll be able to get into the top seven or higher because everybody else is going to be pushing hard for the play-in. Everyone, you know, like you're...
Oh, to get in the top seven of the draft. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're like, and that's what they did this year, right? Like they were, even as of like probably 3 weeks left in the season, they were kind of in the play-in mix and everyone else was trying. So they're like, okay, we'll just lose the rest of our games and we'll get down to the seventh pick.
Yeah. If the play-in doesn't matter to you, that's a tremendous advantage because you're saying we either want to be in the top six or the bottom six, but we don't want to be in that middle four.
Exactly. Yeah. Because, you know, Chicago and Sacramento are desperately trying to get within three games of the play-in so they can feel like they were competing for something all year, even though they, you know, I mean, we kind of saw this year of just like what being the 10th seed in that play-in gets you. You don't have much of a shot there, but
exactly.
All right, well, that was interesting. You want to talk about this is a smaller topic potentially, but I want to talk about this out of bounds rule. Can we fix this?
Okay, great idea. I think so. So we got screwed by this rule a couple times in random regular season games where balls went out of bounds in that exact situation. And then you look at the replay and like it was out off the other team, right? But you'll see, you know, Conley's hand is on the ball for one nanosecond longer. You called it Zapruder filming the replay, and I think that's exactly right. I think they just have to restate it to that if the defender's action and momentum was what caused the ball to go out of bounds, and there is no subsequent separate deflection by the offensive player, that the offensive team retains the ball.
Well, yeah. So now that University of Virginia benefited from this rule, you want to just go ahead and change it? Didn't that happen in like the national championship game? They got like some turnover on this rule and ended up winning as a result?
So the part I remembered was the double dribble they didn't call on Ty Jerome.
I don't even watch any college basketball anymore. That was, but back to your suggestion, I think that's it. And actually, I thought of this later on as I was recording yesterday, that maybe the way you do it, instead of like, okay, who gave it the momentum going out? I think what you say is, unless there's a subsequent touch, you stay with the call on the floor. Like, to overturn, there has to be a subsequent touch.
Mm. That's a great one. That's a great one. Yeah, that's a really good way to phrase it. Yeah.
Well, John, we've talked about it a lot, and we've got this new segment now. We had a lot of excitement in this Phoenix Clippers game. And for anyone who watched the game, you can know that there can be only one thing that we would pick. Scott Foster overturning, Zapruder filming that out-of-bounds call. Patrick Beverley tips it away from Devin Booker. Devin Booker's fingernail is on the ball for just a second longer after Beverley has tipped it. That Scott Foster overturn is the Michelob Ultra moment of the week. There's nothing that Scott Foster enjoys more than getting that direction from the NBA Replay Center, knowing that the call is right down to the millimeter and reversing it. And likewise, there is nothing that you'll enjoy more than Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it, and at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. Enjoyment isn't the end game, it's the whole game. Scott Foster, congratulations on giving us the Ultra moment of the week. If the last year has taught us anything, it's that we don't really need bricks and mortar stores anymore. Going to your local auto parts store really was not a good experience to begin with. In that front area, they never really had anything other than just totally generic stuff. And then you would go to that desk, you probably had to wait in line while the one person who was there at the counter tried to find the part that the person in front of you wanted. And then finally, when you got up there, you'd ask for your part and they'd say, oh yeah, we can order that. It'll be here in 2 weeks. Well, great. I could have just stayed at home and used rockauto.com, got my part faster, and saved a bunch of money. Chain stores at different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. So go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car and truck. You just put your make and model in there. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
What do you think about the other rule change, by the way, where they're going to... The intent is correct. They're trying to get rid of these garbage shooting fouls.
How
do you see this playing out?
Okay, so let me just state what this is. I think it was Shams who reported it. So here's what his article said. The league will train officials to identify and adjudicate the following overt actions to initiate contact with defenders. When a shooter launches or leans into a defender at an abnormal angle, when a shooter kicks his leg up or to the side at an abnormal angle, when an offensive player abruptly veers off his path sideways or backwards into a defender. These actions will now be officiated as either offensive fouls if deemed more than marginal, or no calls if marginal. In the same way, never mind. So that's that seems like what we're hoping for here, right?
Mostly, I'd say the one critique I have is that when they say a player stops and jumps backwards, so these plays where, I'll use Trae Young as the example, where he's going full speed around a pick, and yeah, exactly. When he's going full speed around a pick and then he stops suddenly and jumps up, he actually is not jumping backwards. He is stopping and he is no longer going forward, but he is not going backwards. He is just waiting for the other player to continue going forwards and truck him. And so that still should be a shooting foul on that. And I wonder how that one will be enforced.
So what? Why should that still be a shooting foul? Just because he's going straight up?
Why wouldn't it be? He stopped and went straight up. It's not his fault.
It's a bullshit shot. He's not actually attempting to shoot a shot that will make the basketball go into the basket and count for 2 points for his.
I disagree with that. He's going up. He's facing the basket and he's going straight up. I agree. He's doing it more in an intent to draw the foul. I can't argue that. But like. I guess I see that as much less of a bullshit play than some of the other stuff they're correctly trying to enforce out of the game.
Yeah, and I would consider that abnormal. I would consider that like not really a basketball play, which is kind of what they're trying to get rid of. And also sometimes he's obviously like going into the guy or like leaning backwards and stuff. But would that be veering off of his path? you know, maybe. I mean, I think that one is probably more the Chris Paul, I'm going to injure Anthony Davis by just cutting in front of him as he's innocently jogging back on defense.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
That's the one that, really has to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I guess abnormal is the key here. So, like, it's all, you know, they send out that video at the start of the year with the points of education, and so I'll just be interested to see what's actually on that, because this is really going to be just about what the examples are to determine what is considered abnormal. But to me, abnormal is you're not actually... I am taking this shot to try to draw the foul rather than I am trying to actually make a shot that has a decent chance of going in the basket. Like, if Trae Young didn't know that that guy was behind him and he wasn't going to be rewarded with two free throws by doing that, he doesn't do that move, right?
Yeah, but there's all kinds of stuff you do because you know the position of the defender.
Yeah, but you're still like, things that where the primary intent of this is to make the referee blow his whistle, that's what I don't really care for. Now, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. The other one that's interesting too is, okay, let's say you pump fake the guy in the air from three, and then you know he's going to land on you, and so you got to kind of lean into him at least a little bit, otherwise you're just going to get killed, you know?
Yeah.
Like that one, to me, I think, though, if the guy was going to land on you anyway, then I think you're okay to get the shooting foul. If there's only contact because you took a just comically large step in or to the side, then yeah. I think that's the one they got to get rid of.
Yeah, but like, if you do a fairly regular up and under, and in the process of your step, you go into the guy's path who jumped, like, that to me is a normal basketball play, and that should be a free throw, or two free throws.
Yeah, but I mean, I love that they're trying to take care of this. Obviously, you can't do an absolutely perfect job. There's going to be controversy about, no, that really was normal, okay, how do you know it's normal?
But
I would rather have to worry about that than just watching bullshit for 10 possession games.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody at the league office is sweating having to cut these points of education and find non-Trae Young examples. Oh, no, I can't use Trae. I already used him in the first three clips. Like, shit.
I mean, they're
going through like going through 20 Cleveland Orlando games trying to find one example.
Yeah, like Donovan Mitchell will do that, you know, coming off the screen sometimes. I mean, that's the one that's the hardest to referee right now, is getting over a screen, and whether it's an illegal screen and whether the guy hit the ball handler trying to get space to go over the screen. Like, people always say it's block charge that's the hardest. I think that one, it's pretty easy at this point, even if they're too lenient, I think, in the direction of calling it a charge.
When the guy is trying to get his arm around the screen, and then he hits the dribbler, and the dribbler goes up and tries to get three shots out of it. The Lillard play, basically.
Yeah, I mean, Harden. There's a lot of guys who have Lou Williams. Lou Williams might have been the ultimate at that back in the day. Any playoffs thoughts? What else we got? We got like 20 minutes left here, so should we? Who's your NBA champion? We haven't even talked since like this crazy weekend.
Yeah. So I would say Bucks Nets delivered, right? Amazing finish. I think Milwaukee will win the championship now. They are
my pick. I could see the Suns. Like, Suns Bucks will be a good series, a real series.
I agree with that.
These conference finals are like Phoenix and the Clippers last night. Like, if you just look at the personnel that was on the floor, that was like 2 48 win teams playing each other. It's like a nice 4-5 series in the first round. Very competitive, very exciting, enjoyed the game, but also like not the high level of basketball that you hope for in the conference final.
A little bit of a come down from Milwaukee Brooklyn, certainly, right?
Well, yeah, and even that series, you've got, you know, Milwaukee was playing extremely poorly offensively, and Brooklyn had one guy who could initiate any kind of offense, who just happened to be the best player in the world. But
I did think it was a high-level series in the terms of, like, there were so many guys who got played off the floor as that thing went on. That was a little bit of a signal to me, like, okay, this is pretty good.
No, yeah, that's a good point, right? Like, although maybe there's some players in that for the Clippers who should be played off the floor that Ty Lue just doesn't realize it yet.
Well, I think Ty Lue is playing the long game a little bit, in the sense, I mean, they needed to win last night, so I think maybe they overplayed that a little bit, but just these guys are so, like, Paul George to me especially is running on fumes right now, because they played back-to-back 7-game series and have had basically no, they haven't had 2 days off after a game since like game 4 of Dallas. and they've been playing their starters 40 plus minutes in a lot of these games, especially at the end of those two series. They're really, you know, going, loading up everyone 40, 41. And these are like guys in their 30s. So I think he had a lot of not very good options heading into this series.
Well, Marcus Morris being hurt too kills them.
Yeah, yeah, that exactly. So to not have him as an innings eater either, now you're really in some tough situations. I thought he had a creative solution to say, okay, I'll play Beverly and Zubats at the same time, so Beverly can chase, you know, chase over the screen and be some kind of deterrent, and I'm not just letting a guy go one-on-one against Zubats. I just wonder, he does seem reluctant, though, to really go all in on the five smalls against these guys.
Well, to only play Batum 60 minutes, like, Batum might have been their third best guy in the playoffs. Yeah. That was really weird to me to play him as little as they did. And, you know, I thought Zubats was solid, but, yeah, I mean, not having Morris, because, like, he's only going, when he goes small, he's going small with, like, Rondo and Kennard together. I mean, like, the point of going small is, like, you have some decent size at all the positions, or at least with Beverly, some toughness, and you can switch, but then, you know, they're getting killed by Dario Saric posting up in the paint because they're going small with, like, three guards, which that didn't make a lot of sense to me. But, I think the Suns are just a better team. Obviously, when Paul comes back, Kawhi doesn't seem like that's going to happen. Woj reported that the other day. So we're going to shift into talking playoffs here. Our NBA playoffs coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. I guess we could also, I think like Suns Bucks would be an awesome series. You have the Bucks winning pretty easily in that Hawks series. I actually haven't had a chance to read your preview yet.
Yeah, so I picked the Bucks in five.
Me too.
Atlanta in the conference finals reminds me of a little bit of us being in the conference finals, or Portland being in the conference finals, or like, it's like, okay, you had a great year, everything kind of maxed out for you and worked out fantastic, but now you're kind of a little bit above your level here, at least for now. I mean, I think Atlanta's future is looking really bright when you look at their cap sheet and the number of guys they have in their 20s, and the fact that Hunter and Reddish basically haven't played this year. But in this series, I think they're a little overmatched. I think especially that Gallinari, Collins, and Capella trio playing together that they were able to get away with against Philadelphia because they knew Simmons wouldn't shoot. They can't do that against the Bucks, I don't think. And so now you're looking at, instead of Gallinari being on the floor, it's either Solomon Hill or it's Lou Williams or it's Bogdanovich on one leg, or, you know, you're just looking at a different set of options now in this series. It just strikes me as a very tough series for Atlanta. And that drop coverage that Milwaukee plays, you know, you go back and look at Milwaukee-Atlanta play games over the last couple years, it's worked pretty well against Trey.
Trey doesn't really shoot that three off the pick and roll very often, right? Like, he doesn't just get a screen.
When he does it, he does a reject.
Right. That's what I was just going to say.
He'll fake going right, pull it back to his left, and then shoot the three that way. But he's not shooting the three coming around the screen and saying, the big is too far back, I'm going to pull up from right here. That's the shot that I think he can hurt Milwaukee with. And I do wonder if Atlanta tries to set screens for him like at half court so we can get a running start at shots like that.
I'm guessing they won't, because they didn't do it against Philadelphia, and they should have.
Yeah.
But, I think the only way the series stays close is if Milwaukee continues to have these kind of inexplicable offensive issues like they did against Brooklyn. Now, part of the reason for that was probably because they were playing P.J. Tucker over Bryn Forbes. So maybe they go back to Forbes, and maybe that'll give Atlanta a little bit of a place to hunt. But
even playing Connaughton, I mean, I think they should start Connaughton in this series, because then you match up better anyway when you're looking at young Bogdanovich Herter on the perimeter. Like, you don't need P.J. Tucker to guard Bogdanovich, do you? So bring P.J. Tucker off the bench as like your front court reserve, and then you can kind of keep Portis held back too, because Trae Young and Lou Williams are going to hunt Portis as soon as he checks in the game. So I think that's a better way for Milwaukee to play this. And then you're right. Then you can play Forbes more against this Atlanta team and get some shooting that way. Especially, like, if Solomon Hill checks in, like, Bryn Forbes should be at the scorer's table, right? Like, There's your hiding spot. Bam.
Yeah, and I like that. Yeah, starting Condon, I should have actually come up with that myself. And then P.J. Tucker can just erase Gallinari on the second unit.
Yeah.
Which I think he's quite capable of doing. So, yeah, but if Atlanta can stop Milwaukee and Milwaukee just shoots incredibly terrible from three like they did against... somewhat explained because they're more off the dribble than they would have liked, but you know, Drew Holiday, I think he's going to remember how to play offensive basketball again in this series. They have nobody to guard Chris Middleton.
That's the big one for Atlanta. Yeah, you're either putting Herter or Bogdanovich on him, or you're turning to Solomon Hill and you're setting your offense on fire. Like if they had DeAndre Hunter for this series, I think you at least have more of a case for Atlanta. Because now you have the matchup for Middleton, and it's somebody who can play offense.
Yeah, and Bogdan not being healthy as well. Like you could say, hey, Milwaukee gives up a ton of threes. With Bogdan out there, they're a great three-point shooting team. They could bomb away. They'll win a couple of games that way. But yeah, without him, that's definitely a concern. If you're hiring for your company, what you need is help making your short list of quality candidates. You don't need 500 candidates who just applied with no regard for what the actual qualifications are. You need Indeed instead. You can post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. You can also use skill tests to winnow down the field of applicants. And using Indeed overall will, on average, reduce the amount of time you spend on hiring by 27%. You only pay for the candidates that meet your must-have qualifications, and you can schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. They've got over 130 skills tests, or you can even add your own. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. So you're getting the high-quality candidates, you're saving time, and ultimately, getting the applicants that are right for you. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/locked, the name of this network. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/locked. Indeed.com/locked. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. We are brought to you today by Credit Karma, a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. When you use your Credit Karma Money debit card, you can win daily instant Karma purchase reimbursements on items up to $5,000. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot, and your instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. They've already given away over $3 million to over 50,000 members. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. No minimum balance, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll automatically be entered to win $1 million. Credit Karma Money. Progress starts here. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank, Inc. Member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply. 15 minutes left here. You want to talk a little bit about the off seasons for some of these vanquished teams?
Yeah. Let's talk about Philadelphia, because that's one everyone wants to talk about. I mean,
everyone does.
The second Simmons turned down that shot, just the instant light bulb in my head was like, I had been thinking this anyway, but it just went from like 70% to 100% for me. Like, there's no way they can bring this guy back anymore. Like the instant that play happened, like while the game is still going on, it's just like that's it. Like that's game over right there. Like there's something there that I think isn't going to get fixed in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and Simmons makes the All-Star team every year and second in defensive player of the year, even though I wouldn't have had him that high. I don't think really in this day and age any perimeter player should be that high for regular season defensive player of the year, and he's also not really a great help defender. So like the idea, you want to play Ben Simmons at center, but he can't really be that defensively. You know, if we were talking about Draymond Green defensively and then what he is offensively, I think you could kind of live with that, and also his trade value would be higher. But it just, you know, are we talking about like a 6'10 Marcus Smart who can't shoot now? Is that sort of, that's like what Ben Simmons is? In the regular season, maybe not, but
I think the thing with Simmons is that you can leverage him a lot more if you don't have Embiid. Like if you have four shooters and you can use him as a screener or as like a fake five, basically, and do some stuff with him that way, where the middle of the floor is more open. I think that opens some possibilities with him that you don't have right now the way that team is constructed. I mean, to me, the essential issue is that Simmons and Embiid are not truly complementary pieces. And so if you're Philadelphia, which one do you maximize? Well, duh, you maximize Embiid, right? I mean, when healthy, he is arguably the best player in the league. So that's the one you maximize. And to me, that means you have to turn around and try to get value for Simmons. And it's hard because you're looking for value that helps you win now. But I think deals will be out there for him. He's signed for a few more years. You may not love the money, but he is signed. He's pretty young still, and I think other teams are intrigued by him and the fact that he could be better in a different situation.
Yeah, if the money weren't just so high, you would feel a little bit better about it, I think. But yeah, so I guess the question that's going to come to mind for me is, how much are they going to be willing to swallow their pride to bring him back? Because I agree with you. I think, honestly, I would try to move him for like anything that's even remotely reasonable, just the pieces that will fit better, because you have to give Joel Embiid a chance to work with real NBA spacing around him and with a real perimeter player who can run this play. It's called a pick and roll. You ever heard of that? Is like good at that play, and also someone who can, like, you know, enter the ball to him as well, right? Like someone who's a good passer who can get the ball into the post to him when, you know, they're like slightly fronting him or whatever. Like, they don't even have that guy, right? Because Simmons, he's a good passer, but if he tries to enter the ball, he'll just be in his man will just be in Embiid's lap and he can't do it. But the question is, okay, you know, the CJ for Ben Simmons thing, that's been pointed out there. You know, would Portland do something like that? I mean, that seems like one of the higher end things that they could get for him at this point. Now, again, I've always been lower on Simmons. I don't know how much everyone is coming back to where I am on this right now, but like the type of team that would want Ben Simmons, like, doesn't really seem out there, right? Yes, he's under contract for a while, but I thought Houston's situation was perfect, right? Like, Ben Simmons, if you're truly rebuilding, like, what do you want with Ben Simmons, right? If you're really in that rebuilding mode. So you're kind of looking for a team that's in that, like, trying to get into the playoffs or maybe kind of in the lower end of the playoffs. And there are not that many of those teams.
One worth thinking about is Simmons to the Knicks. And you're trading him into room, basically. You need to do a three-way trade and get a player back that way.
Simmons and I think, Randall is an atrocious fit, though.
Yes.
Who and you still don't have any rim protection, right? So you need a center also to play. Tom Thibodeau is going to play a center.
So the reason I thought of that is partly because I think the Knicks, especially Thibodeau's outlook on this sort of roster, is medieval enough that they might pursue this. Maybe I'm not giving them enough credit. The other one I think that is worth considering is Chicago for Zach LaVine and Al-Farouq Aminu, where LaVine is in the last year of his contract. There's some questions about whether he'd want to come back. If you're Chicago, do you really want to do a renegotiate and extend just to make him happy? You have Vooch there, who, like, Vooch can be at the three-point line or at the elbow wheeling and dealing, and he doesn't constrict Simmons' space as much to do his thing. So I think that one's at least interesting.
Why do you want to do that as Chicago, though? Just because you don't believe in LaVine at all? That's the idea?
If you don't believe LaVine is going to be back there next year, that's the reason you do it.
Huh. And you're still operating as an over-the-cap team at that point. I don't see where Ben Simmons and Nikola Vucevic is getting you. They'll have, like, zero offense on the perimeter. Like, you got to have somebody who can be a perimeter attacking star, right? Like, I mean, then you're...
On a positive note, Vooch is used to this.
Even then, though, like, you know, John Isaac would stand outside the three-point arc, at least. But, well, because if you do that trade, you're basically a worse version of the Sixers on offense, because Vucevic isn't as good as Embiid. Mm-hmm. And, like, Ben Simmons isn't going to make you good defensively just on his own with Vucevic and, you know, some other perimeter guys. Like, I think you're clearly making your team way worse if you do that trade, if you're the Bulls. Do you agree on that? And it's just, so it would just be like a contract thing, we're going to lose them anyway, or do you not agree that they're worse if they make that trade?
I mean, I do think they'd be better on defense, but yeah, you have to find a guard from somewhere. That's the challenge, right? You gotta come up with that piece with your, and you're doing it with your mid-level exception and or Lauri Markkanen's bird rights. So that I agree that piece of it is challenging, but frankly, the Bulls' general puzzle is challenging. They're in a tough situation, I think, and they kind of dug themselves a deeper hole with that trade. I think that you would, if you're in their situation, you'd feel a lot better if you had a lottery pick right now than you do having Vooch for 2 years.
No, it's a good point. I mean, I was not a fan of the trade when it happened, but I mean, here's the other thing about trading LaVine too. He's really improved a ton these last few years, right? Like,
I agree.
At his age, which is athleticism, and then you're trading him for someone who maybe hasn't quite shown the same level of improvement over the last few years. Yeah. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I think that's safe to say.
Well, okay, so LaVine, I mean, what about the Portland angle? What about CJ for Simmons? CJ, also not a great contract, but also
not
just
a much better fit. A better fit, like you're still pretty, like your backcourt, if you're CJ and Curry, I mean, that's a lot of offense there, I guess, but you're defensively, you're really not great. Man, I still think you can do a little better than CJ there, but yeah, it's tough. The problem when you get into high level players is that there just aren't that many of them. And so you end up with some imperfect things, right? I'm sure what Philadelphia is thinking is, please Bradley Beal demand a trade. Please Bradley Beal demand a trade, right? And then you could do that with Washington.
Yeah. But I don't know that they would have the best package at that point, right? Like, I think,
yeah,
obviously Beal would be an unbelievable fit there, but I don't think that Washington, because if Beal, they move on from Beal, I mean, maybe the thought is like, well, with Ben Simmons and Russell Westbrook, we can all jump on board again to chase the 10th seed next year. Is that the thought there?
That's the thought every year. Why wouldn't that be the thought?
Oh, man. Well, at least, you know, they have someone to take all the shots that Ben Simmons wouldn't want to take.
What do you think about, I don't like this one either, Ben Simmons for D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge believer in D'Angelo Russell as your primary perimeter guy in the playoffs. Really hurts your defense as well when you're playing like a drop coverage. I guess you're kind of relying on Thybulle then as your perimeter stopper. That's not going to help your offense too much either. I mean, the fit in Minnesota wouldn't be bad, though. That's one of the better ones. I mean, you're still, you're consigning Karl-Anthony Towns to the same fate as Joel Embiid, where it's like he's going to have no space to work in the post. But Karl is also a great shooter, but he'll just have to do more of that, which is he kind of wants to do anyway. We'll see. But oh gosh. Yeah, the crux of the question here to me is, let's say, you know, CJ McCollum level of guy isn't available. Are you willing to go down to that next group? Say you sign, let's say they can sign and trade for Kyle Lowry and with one of their first round picks. And are you willing to just move off of him for like a couple of starters who just fit a little bit better, who are not really like elite players?
Derek White and Devin Vassell, like something like that.
Oh, dude, like, I would do that in a second as Philly.
I know, absolutely. As president of the Derek White fan club, you would be all over
that. Well, but it's just like, these are guys who just fit. Like they actually, but yeah, I mean, something like that, you know, just for some of those Spurs guys or Keldon Johnson or, you know, that would be, and you would also, because part of your problem is that your perimeter defense is going to get a lot worse. The other thing too is like, it might be nice to not have Tobias Harris on the team anymore either, because he sort of doesn't, if you, so this is like my fantasy was Simmons for CJ and then they sign and trade for Lowry, and then you've got Lowry, CJ, Tobias Harris, and Embiid. And maybe, because you got to kind of go Utah Jazz style ensemble cast around Embiid. Like, getting another superstar, you're just probably not going to do that at this point. Simmons' trade value to me is not
high. How are you signing trading for Lowry?
George Hill would be the biggest part of it. And I think they could just get under the hard cap. Yeah, like, it would be close.
Yeah, that hard cap is going to be an issue.
Move on, you put your draft pick in there. You probably would have to, I mean, maybe you would have to put Seth Curry in that deal just to save money. Obviously, you would love to keep him, but he's kind of superfluous if you've got CJ and you've got Kyle Lowry as well.
And it also is going to end up costing you Danny Green.
Yeah, no, it would. That would definitely.
not to mention Dwight Howard. How do you re-sign Dwight Howard? I mean, talk about a crucial player.
Well, he might actually look a lot better on the second unit with, like, he can play some pick and roll. So I don't know. That's my fantasy, though. I think that could be, like, a decent team. But I think that's the best you can do around Embiid is just get some ball handling and shooting. But Harris is, like, not a great fit to me with Embiid either, right? Like, you would rather have someone who's just kind of more focused on shooting. And you need, if you're moving on from Simmons, now you need someone who can defend on the wing. Thibault might be a little too limited there as a shooter. I don't know. They're in trouble. I think they're in difficulty here,
yeah,
to be sure.
Yeah, I do think trading Simmons at least lets you maximize whatever Thibault can be. Because right now, like, you play Thibault and Simmons together, and, you know, may as well just punt the ball into the stands rather than try to run an offense.
No, but that was the case in the Hawks series.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. But I just wonder of whether, like, yes, you and I both agree they have to trade him. But, I mean, what is really the level where you're like, okay, we're going to hold on to him. This is too bad of an offer. So some have said, well, hey, at next trade deadline, he'll have, like, had a nice regular season and gotten out in transition, and they'll have a nice record next year. And so you'll get more for him at the trade deadline. I don't think that's the case. I think you get more for him in the offseason. It's just more teams are trying to trade. You have more teams that can delude themselves into thinking that they can be good next year. Teams have cap space to absorb them. You got extra roster spots. Like, it's just easy. Like, guys just get more value getting traded in the offseason, to me, it seems like.
I think that's generally the case. And then I think you eliminate some of the downside risk of, like, does he come into next season and he's still terrified to shoot a free throw, and then things really start going sideways, and now you're really eroding his trade value to the point where people look at that number and are like, hell no. And then then he's Kevin Love, right? So you got to take that scenario off the table if you're Philly too.
Yeah, I view the magnitude of his downside next year to be far greater than the magnitude of his upside. Or what if you come in and Embiid is hurt for part of the year and you're flubbing around at, like, you know, the sixth or seventh seed around the trade deadline, and, you know, that's not going to increase his value either. So yeah, I think you got to move him now, because there's the chance that he just becomes completely toxic, and it hopefully hasn't reached that point yet. I view that as a greater risk than the risk of, oh, we got too little for him, because I don't think his value is going to go up that much. Everyone is going to remember these playoffs, like, unless this, oh, Doc Rivers, they're going to work with them, and, like, you know, maybe he'll work with someone other than his family this offseason, and, like, but do you really you want to count on that after 4 years that he's going to come back a changed player next year? I wouldn't want to put my eggs in that basket either.
Yeah, that is the smokiest of smoke screens to me.
All right, well, this was fun. Thanks so much for joining us and joining us on Locker Room, or actually, sorry, Spotify Green Room, I should say, as well. And we will talk to y'all next week. Till then.